is key to understanding your customers and making more empowered business decisions. But what if we could make data more comprehensible and visually powerful? Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Emily Steckenborn, and you're listening to Bottled in China. This is the podcast that dives into the delicious and fascinating world of food and beverage. We cover innovation, market trends, and culture with thought leaders from around the world. Today, we speak with Kathy Huya, co-founder of Enalytics, about transforming data. Enalytics provides data-driven business intelligence to beverage alcohol companies from around the world. Its clients include Bollinger Champagne, Wines of California, Wines of Chile, and many more. She's also the co-creator of content for A Balanced Glass, a community dedicated to wellness in the wine industry. And she currently writes for Forbes.com about the business and politics of the wine industry, as well as for Inc.com about entrepreneurs with a special focus on women. She's the author of award-winning book, Hungry for Wine, Seeing the World Through the Lens of a Wine Glass. And you may have seen her on Reign of Terroir episode on Netflix series Rotten as a featured commentator. All right. Well, before we dive into this fascinating podcast, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. And if you love this podcast, you can share it with a friend or you can connect with me on Instagram at Bottled in China. Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Bottled in China. Today, I'm very excited. Kathy's joining us. We just went through your bio in the intro. And Kathy, you are absolutely amazing. I really feel like you're a power woman. You are unbelievably busy. So you're co-founding. Today we're going to speak about data analytics. You co-founded Enalytics, but you're also a writer at Forbes.com. You also do so much more creation, especially something that's very fascinating. You're also the co-creator of content for Balance, A Balanced Glass. And I want to have you back to discuss wellness in the wine industry. But wow, can you tell us a little bit about how you found your journey in the wine industry?
Yeah, and let me start by saying thank you very much. I'm honored to be here and honored by your interest. The wine industry has been a vocation, really. It's been a calling for a long time, for a good 15 years now. I didn't start out in wine. My family didn't drink wine at home, but my mom was a baker. My mom was a baker, and so I grew up around her cookies and her cakes and her decorations and just her attention to the details. And so I was actually on the academic track. I was finishing my dissertation, and I was newly married. My husband and I moved from Boston out to San Francisco, but I got pretty antsy pretty quickly by all sort of the intellectual, mental stuff, and I really needed something to do with my hands. So I literally knocked on the kitchen door at Chez Panisse in Berkeley, Alice Waters' restaurant that she started. And I asked them if I might be able to work there. And that's sort of where it started. From there, I ended up going to cooking school in France, in Burgundy. And in the meantime, my husband and I moved from San Francisco to Las Vegas, where I got a job working for Thomas Keller at Bouchon. He had just opened their breakfast service there at the time. And that is actually where I got the wine bug, I would say, because a sommelier named Jeff Eichelberger, who was working at Bouchon at the time, he literally sat me down and he said, "This is why we drink wine." And he lined up a whole bunch of French wines and a whole bunch of California wines. And we went through them one by one. And that was really my first introduction to the nature of real hospitality when it comes to wine. I'll never forget it. I was still, hadn't made the jump fully though. I was still working in academic things. I was working on a project in the Middle East. And during a trip there, I really began to see that no matter how many hours a day we sit around a conference table and hash out details and contracts and things like that, the real progress, the real significant movement forward happens around the dinner table. It happens at the end of the day. It happens when we're sharing food, sometimes drinks. And so that was sort of a turning point for me. When I came back to Boston, I started writing about wine every day. My first blog was called 365 Days of Wine. where I promised myself that I would take a sip of wine or a glass or maybe a half bottle every day for a year and write about the experience. And I would learn about it along the way. So I developed an audience that way, eventually started writing for the local newspaper. And for the past 6 years or so now, I've been writing for Forbes about the business and the politics of the industry. And it was when I was writing for Forbes and covering technology and covering sort of the innovation beat within wine that I recognized the potential for working with data, especially consumer data. It seems like with all of the new platforms that had been developing and launching, that consumers were telling us every moment of every day what they think about wine and how they feel and what they're buying and what they're not buying. So to me, that was sort of a moment of recognition where I was like, there's really something that can be done here. So that was more than 4 years ago now. And it has been a really amazing journey, entrepreneurial journey ever since.
Wow. First of all, Shi Pan Yis is so yummy. I went there for dinner when I was out in SF and it's so good. And I'm a little bit shocked that you didn't fall in love with wine and Burgundy, that it took you going to Las Vegas to really fall in love with wine and open your eyes to that. But what a beautiful journey, you know?
Yeah, and clearly I didn't have the fortune of meeting the right people in Burgundy at the time. I know them now, and boy, I would do anything to cross paths with them in Burgundy now. But it really comes down to the people, doesn't it? And sort of the people who you relate to and the people who you connect with, who sort of open doors and open kind of vistas of possibility for you.
Yeah, it's always about meeting the right person and the person who's going to guide you. But it's really fascinating because I do think what happened about, you know, being able to see all the different wines from around the world and that kind of sentence of this is why we drink wine. I think anybody who loves wine and who's listening today could really feel that. I think all of us had that kind of wow moment where it all made sense why people were all about wine and why it's so fascinating. All you need are a couple glasses to really be able to see all the differences and how wine is so complex and so interesting. So, wow, what a fascinating story. And I really think that I'm sure a lot of people could all relate that that's one of our experiences as well, is discovering the beauty of wine.
Yeah. And aren't we lucky to have done that? Aren't we lucky
for
that,
sure,
that has happened? I really believe that it's life-changing to find that thing, whatever that thing is for you, whether it's wine or whether it's photography or whatever, that interests you so much that you want to do it every day. And aren't we lucky that we did?
For sure. And you do it in so many different facets as well. Today, we're going to talk specifically about data, but you do it in so many ways of writing and communication, even through Netflix, that is, and in your bio, that was absolutely fascinating. But I want to go back to data today. So many people are confused about the word data, that you hear big data and analytics and all these different kind of keywords. But for anybody listening, can you break down what is big data and also why is access to the visualization part of big data so important for the wine industry, especially now, given COVID and given the market is changing so rapidly?
Right, absolutely. It has a lot to do with what I mentioned a moment ago around the digital trail that consumers are leaving every moment of the day all around the world. It has to do with the digital trail that businesses, that retailers and, you know, restaurants and consumers who buy directly from wineries, these are all creating, these moments are all creating data, right? And so when you accumulate them all and at really a scale, then you're talking about big data. And we're talking about millions and millions and millions of records that we've analyzed over time, whether it's getting a really clear understanding of tasting notes and the language of wine and how consumers or critics or both talk about wines in different cultures and in different parts of the country even. That's often a light bulb moment. And I feel to respond to the part about why is it so important right now, more than any other time, I feel like maybe in modern history, the wine industry really, really needs to understand who our people are. Who are our people? Who are our customers? Who are our clients? Who are our accounts? And we can do that by following the digital trail. Big data has existed in wine for a really long time, and probably an embarrassing amount of money has been spent on data that unfortunately has just sort of sat on a shelf because the data arrives in CSV files or spreadsheets, and it's millions of rows or hundreds of thousands of rows and cells. And you're like, it takes a really special person to be able to do something with that. That's a special skill set, and it's not the wine skill set, if you know what I mean. So a lot of what Enolytics does is connect those two things, connect the data that is meaningful to people, as well as the people who need it to mean something. So we spend a lot of time doing that, especially now, as you mentioned, under COVID. It's actually become, I would say, even more important for wineries and wine businesses to understand who they're selling to and to be able to really get granular around their audience so that they're able to speak to the different segments of the different personas of their own audience in a way that they couldn't have seen without it being visualized or without it sort of an analyst skills sort of and their eyes looking at the data.
Right. And actually, that's very interesting that you say that, because a lot of companies in general that I see in the market, especially maybe here in China, they're trying to decode the data, and it's very easy to misinterpret data. And sometimes what I also see is there's a lot of resource allocation towards manpower to decode what's happening and all these different trends and even purchasing habits within one company. But as you mentioned, it's about being able to filter through that and make it understandable and also realize and read through your client base, right? And I find that very interesting that, as you mentioned, it is so important, and yet sometimes we get overwhelmed with data. So I guess my next question would be, you know, what are some of the critical questions big data is able to really help the wine industry and also businesses answer?
Yeah, and it's true that data can be overwhelming, and data gets a bad rap because it can be interpreted in all sorts of ways and misinterpreted often as well. So how do you wade through it? And I think that one of the most important critical questions that data is able to help wine businesses answer is the question of who are their most important customers. And we find that it really sort of hashes out to the 80-20 rule in the sense that 20% of customers account for 80% of the revenue. So obviously you want to focus on them. So right away, that's one way to sort of push aside a fair amount of the data that's kind of, it's good to know, and it's valuable, you know, when you have time to dig into it. But for starters, you want to focus on the piece of your customers who generate the most revenue. So that, I feel like, is one of the most critical questions that data is able to answer. Who are they? Who are these most critical customers? What are their patterns historically? What are their previous purchasing patterns? And what do those patterns tell me about how I should engage with them moving forward? That's really important. Who are those most valuable customers? And then secondarily, where are they? Literally on a map, where are those customers? To be able to visualize, this gets back to your visualization question, to be able to visualize in the country, where on the globe are they? And to be able to zoom in and out. But then the power of being able to overlay that with what those customers in this market have bought over time and the patterns of what they've purchased over time. Those, I think, the who are the customers and where are the customers, those are two really critical questions that I think data is able to help wine businesses answer.
Yeah. And, you know, that's actually very cool that you can actually be on a map and see where everybody is and kind of the hotspots of your customers, and then hopefully plan events around those areas that make sense for your key customers to come and join, right? I feel sometimes you do an event because it's trendy, but it's far away from your key customers. And another thing is, as you mentioned, kind of zoning in into who are your types of customers. And, you know, there's a lot of the time you try to please everybody. You're trying to recruit casual buyers or spectators, but in fact, they're not the ones, as you mentioned, the 80-20 rule, they're not the ones who are actually purchasing from you. So it's absolutely important. And I know that there was some information last time I spoke with Emetree that they were also discussing the same thing. Don't focus on your database growth. It's really focused on your retention rate. You know, who are your active purchasers? And it's so easy to get lost in trying to find really impressive numbers, but really, who are your reoccurring buyers? How are they engaging with you? What works and what doesn't work? And if you can't continue to engage your top performers or your consistent buyers, then you're actually just wasting a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of resources.
Right. And you can also fine tune your searches of the data in order to give you the source, the kind of information that will be most valuable to your customers, so that you're not doing sort of the spray and pray approach where you're being able to be really targeted about who you're talking to, where your events are, as you mentioned, and what those people want out of an event. That information is all there in the data. It's just a question of being able to parse it out.
Right. So I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, it's analytics. And can you tell us a little bit about when people are working with you, what are some data that they've been really surprised about that they didn't see before? And do you have any kind of examples that people were a little bit shocked when they were working with you?
Yeah. So the geography that I mentioned is really a big one. It's both a surprise and a light bulb moment. We're working right now with a distributor who looked at sort of the map and those pins kind of mapped out. And clearly a light bulb went on for them. And they said, look at this desert of opportunity in this one city between these two clusters of customers. So we could see that there was this cluster of customers, and then, you know, 40 blocks to the south was another cluster of customers. But in between was like open sky. And so for them, it was like, we're already there, you know, nearby anyway. So what are we missing in that open space in between? So that's an example. Another is an example of a winery who's looked at it in a couple different ways. One winery might look at a map like that of their direct-to-consumer customers, for example, and say, well, now it's really clear where I should plan my next in-market visit, right? But then a different winery might look at it and say, the pins are so scattered and sort of distributed that it's clear to me, or what this winemaker took away from it, was that they haven't focused on their secondary market. It's really clear who their primary market is, but because their pins were so scattered, it told them that they needed to do a much better job of really focusing on the next part of that 20% of people who generate most of their revenue.
Right. And also it's great for planning. If you're going to have, you want to hire sales, you want to know exactly where you should allocate resources. That's so important because sometimes you always want to build and grow, but if you really can't see where you are right now and where you want to be headed, sometimes you're taking a wild shot, right? And these blind shots are very costly. And I think especially now as we're looking to trim down manpower and looking to improve sales, we want to be able to have a really clear idea and clear roadmap of where to go or where not to go, actually, right? So it's how you utilize your resources. And I think that's almost like our second question is like, it's all about how we're changing after COVID and be a little bit more lean sometimes and being smarter with our decisions. And that means using data to make more educated decisions.
Absolutely. And the benefit of actually investing in this kind of analysis turns out to be a cost savings in the long run, rather than sort of the more spray and pray approach that I mentioned. But your point really brings up another topic around being able to use data to identify historical trends, being able to see the patterns and pull out, for example, what happened during rosé season for the past 5 years with this brand, being able to sort of segment it that way. That's completely possible and actually a really smart way to, you know, approach the data in a strategic fashion so that, I mean, and this year being obviously the unusual case, but being able to look at those patterns over time, that is definitely something that the data can do that they weren't able to see if all you're doing is looking at hundreds of thousands of CSV lines of data in a CSV file.
Mm-hmm. Right, for sure. Now, You were just talking about cost, and just to give everybody kind of a ballpark figure, if somebody was interested in either working with you or even in general looking to improve their data, what is the budget they should be aiming for? Let's say they're a small winery, you know, they make about 20,000 cases, so they're relatively small. What is the budget you would recommend starting off with? Because I think that's a question a lot of people probably are having, is they think data is super expensive and they also feel that they might be turned off because it's an extra cost. So what should they kind of budget for?
Yeah, so this is a big reason why a couple weeks into COVID, one of the pivots that we embraced was called Enolytics Lite, L-I-T-E. And so because we recognized that there, especially during COVID, there would be a large number of small and mid-sized wineries in particular who will really benefit from this kind of analysis in order to bring them closer to their consumer. So we launched Enolytics Lite, which is a scalable model from our side, from our perspective, which means that we could keep costs low without, and at the same time, not overtaxing the small and mid-sized wineries who could benefit the most from it. So an individual project that uses the model that we built for Enolytics Lite could start at $2,000. We've done projects for exponentially more than that, and those are the most sophisticated projects, but that sometimes is not what the small and mid-sized wineries need or are looking for or frankly could afford. So we think that there's, just because your winery is small or your data set is small, doesn't mean that you should be overlooked, or it doesn't mean that you shouldn't have access to the power of the tools of data science. So it's Enolytics Lite is our response to that need. At the same time, having sort of the full suite of the very sophisticated tools available for those wine businesses who would benefit from that.
And that's such a big savior. As we just mentioned already, it's about making the right decisions. And if you are tight on cash, even though it starts around $2,000, I still think you can probably save a lot of money by making the right decision. So hopefully that's really fascinating. And it's great that you guys did that because, yeah, a lot of wineries are looking for ways to increase sales right now. And we're all in a tough spot, you know, in general. So hopefully this can help out some people. And one of the things, you know, while we're on this topic, if, you know, right now we're switching into a new finance year for some people, and if they wanted to come see you and approach you, would you say that they need to already have data through, let's say, their mailing list or through their cellar door? Or are you able to work with somebody who has absolutely no data? I mean, when should they come see you and approach you and really come see Enolytics?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the truth is that we have never worked with a wine business, a winery, or any other type of business who didn't have data to start with. And I feel like this is something well worth saying, is that wineries in particular underestimate what they have in their own four walls, so to speak. I feel like they undervalue their list, they undervalue their purchasing history, they undervalue their club data. There's quite a lot that we could do with just a couple pieces of information about DTC list, for example, a wine club that sells direct to consumer. That is actually quite a treasure trove of information. And partly we need to, there's often sort of a fact-finding mission where we talk about, the question is, what, tell us about your data. And they'll sort of, you can sort of almost imagine them shuffling their feet a little bit and like, oh, I don't know, I don't think we have enough, or this is going to be too expensive, or we're not significant enough. But then it's another surprise, to go back to one of your other questions, it's another surprise to say, actually, you're already holding some really important information that could help you do a significantly better job of communicating with the people who are already your fans, who have already bought from you. And so that is, we've never had an occasion where someone's come to us and had absolutely zero data. It's mm-hmm. often a fact-finding mission, which is great and really interesting and revealing about how dispersed, I would say, and how many different companies are holding different parts of data throughout the industry. But that's where to start.
Right. And if somebody right now is listening to this, what is an additional question to ask their customers or an additional data layer that you would suggest they add on this year, if there is anything specific for COVID or the last year or so, that you would love to see? So next time they come see you, they have something interesting that they can bring to the table that's going to help you analyze their information.
Yeah, well, oftentimes we'll find that a winery's data is sort of sitting within a legacy system that has been providing them service for a number of years. So if there was a way for the winery to extract that data themselves, that would make things tremendously easier on our side. But one of the first things that I can say that we would want to try to do is to segment that list and be able to generate personas or profiles of customers that a winery already has. It's a very well-founded marketing strategy to create personas of your ideal customers. But what data allows us to do is to create those actual personas, not fictitious, but actual personas of people who have already bought from you. And what has their behavior been over time, and what have they bought, and where do they live, and what do the trends say that they're likely to respond well to if you offered them, you know, XYZ product. So that's sort of the first step that we would want to take.
Well, that's so important, because I think a lot of us are probably thinking right now at home, okay, yeah, I could, that all makes sense. You know, we probably all send the same email out to the same 100 or 300 customers, but, you know, exactly as you mentioned, it's about segmenting our different categories and not giving one type of email to everybody at, you know, to expect one response, because exactly, you have different targeted content that needs to be created, different types of events that need to be happening to reach a different category, different consumer. And that kind of brings me back to our next question, because data is kind of a cold world. And I feel that for me, maybe whenever I hear the word data, I think of somebody behind in a computer and like you said, crunching Excel numbers, and it's kind of just number driven. But in general, I want to know, you really make it come alive. You make it visual. And so how have you guys helped people come closer to their customers?
Yeah, I love this question, and thank you for asking it. It actually really feeds on what we were just talking about the personas. It's the difference. What data enables us to do is identifying and really giving us a lot more information about who you want to be talking to. It's the difference between reaching out to a customer who's, for example, a 30-something single woman in Brooklyn who loves red blends, compared to a 60-something retiree in Houston who has bought Zinfandel from you for the past 12 vintages. So those are very different people, and they want very different things, and their purchasing patterns will be very different. So naturally, you're going to want to talk to them in a different way. And that, I think, humanizes the experience. It puts a humane touch, really. And the way that you asked it was, how does data allow businesses to become closer to clients? But for me, data does the work of saying, look, this is your 30-something single woman living in Brooklyn who loves XYZ wine of yours. And this is how we should talk to her, compared to, you know, this other 60-something retiree in Texas. And this is how we should talk to him. So they're two very different people that I think deserve two very different approaches.
Yeah. And wine is so personal, right? So whenever you receive kind of a marketing message that just doesn't appeal to you, you feel like the winery doesn't represent you, right? So it's really being able to connect with the winery. And I think all of us have a brand of wine or a wine or even a beer brand that is, or spirits, that we do it because it represents us. We're kind of like part of that kind of cult, right? Part of that energy that it exudes. And so when you have a marketing message that just does not align with the person's idea of who you are or who they are as well, it kind of conflicts them and they don't feel that connected to the brand. And I think these days, in a competitive world, it's all about connecting and being closer to our customers. And of course, that brings us to our last question, Kathy, is how can people connect with you? How can we learn more about analytics? How can we learn more about all the various projects and read about everything you write about in Forbes as well and get to know you?
Yeah, well, the easiest way is just the website, enolytics.com. enolytics.com. Right there on the homepage, you'll see something called Enolytics 101. And that is our weekly blog post. It's also a newsletter that you could sign up for. And that's our way of communicating around the power of data for wine. We're in the process of starting up a wine data community where everybody who's working in data in the wine industry, we're offering them a resource to come together. And, you know, we jokingly talked about it as a support group, quote unquote, for data people who do wine and wine people who need to do data. So that's on the website, enolytics.com, and look for Enolytics 101. There are videos there as well. And when I write something for Enolytics or for Forbes or for Inc. or for a Balanced Glass, I often put it on LinkedIn. So it's easy to find me on LinkedIn. And there's Twitter handles for myself personally as well as Enolytics too.
Perfect. Well, we're going to put all the information in the show notes. So anybody listening who wants to go take a look, it's really easy. Check our show notes. You can click on the link and you'll be able to go check out Enolytics. But Kathy, what a fascinating podcast. I really feel like this is the first time that data makes sense. And I think as a visual person, this is probably the answer that a lot of us have been asking for. So thanks so much for connecting those dots together and making data understandable and visual.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And I feel like I spend a lot of my time evangelizing on behalf of data. And good because it's so useful and so powerful. And the industry has never needed it more, I would say.
Certainly. Thanks so much and cheers.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you love this podcast, make sure to share it with a friend or click 5 stars on iTunes to show your support.